support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC comes from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. Welcome to Alaska Live. I'm your host, Lori Neufeld. Here in the studio, it's the production of The Color of Gold, and I want to welcome my guests, Emerson Eads and Cassandra Tilley, and Cindy
Oxbury.
I had the O first, and Oxbury, all from the production of The Color of Gold, and you have a whole cast of characters with you, too. Welcome, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And who would like to start off with talking about how this opera came about? Cassandra, it looks like you're ready to talk about, you're the librettist, which means that you wrote all the lyrics and the plot of this opera.
That's correct. The idea for The Color of Gold has been a long process. When I first moved to Fairbanks about 15 years ago, I've been very interested in the background of the town. And as I started reading some of those historical perspectives by people like Dermot Cole, Terrence Cole, Lael Morgan, about life in the Gold Rush and Fairbanks at the turn of the century, different ideas started coming to mind. The one thing that really triggered some introspection on my part was reading Good Time Girls. Yes. By Lael Morgan, and hearing some of the things that led different women into a path of unrighteousness, shall we say. And that made me think about what I would do if I were in some of the situations these ladies found themselves in, if they were in a mining town with no means of support, how I would take care of my own then 6-year-old daughter and the choices that I might make. And so those thoughts led to two of the characters that you meet in the opera, Abigail and Belinda.
Because you have some dancing girls and some women that came along with, the idea of a mining and a gold rush town.
That's right. You have the miners. You have the camp followers, as it were, the saloon girls who are there to entertain. And then you also have the ladies of the town.
What a treat this will be for opera goers, because that is, it's done in English, for one thing, and so there'll be no need for subtitles.
That's correct.
Because it's set in the Gold Rush town of Fairbanks.
That's correct. The whole opera was inspired by the founding of Fairbanks.
And the premiere weekend is this weekend, and it's at Pioneer Park.
That's correct. The world premiere is Friday night at 7:30 at Pioneer Park Centennial Theater.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is your performance schedule.
That's correct.
And all at 7? Sunday is
7:30.
I believe the Friday and Saturday performances are at 7:30, and Sunday is at 2 p.m.
Okay, so it's a matinee on Sunday. Great. And listeners, there will be a quiz because I have tickets to give away. So it would serve you well to listen carefully to some of these things about The Color of Gold. You could win your chance to go to one of the performances this weekend, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And Emerson, is this a dream of yours to write the music for an opera? Because you composed the music for The Color of Gold.
Yes, I did. Of course, it's a dream to compose an opera, but it's one I never really thought was going to actually happen until I was commissioned by Opera Fairbanks, and I was very fortunate, no one ever told me I couldn't write one, I set out to do it, much like the miners set out to come north to Alaska in a lot of ways, like not really knowing what lay ahead, but
what an interesting correlation you make with that.
There was some quixotic elements in both, and but anyway, I think now we have an opera that has some really compelling elements in it, and the music was certainly fun to write. It's all very jagged and rough hewn rhythms, and a lot of fives and tens and sevens that have the singers on their toes all the time.
But So how does that work? Because Sandra Tilly wrote the libretto, and then you come in and write the music around it, or was it a kind of collaborative effort? I'm not quite sure how that works. Cassandra might have to tell us, too.
Well, I started out with my idea of the libretto, and we had to do a little bit of negotiation on some of the musical passages to make things more singable, to make the storyline flow a little bit better. So it was definitely a collaborative effort to make this come to pass.
Nice. I know any time that I said, oh, hey, Emerson, would you like to host an afternoon concert this summer? It was, I'd love to, but I am writing the music for an opera. So,
exactly.
We missed you over the summer, but we can't wait to see this come to fruition.
Thank you.
Cindy, I want to ask you, this project, have you been dreaming of this also for a long time?
Well, actually, Emerson's been dreaming it for me. I work with Emerson at the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. I'm a guest artist instructor here in the musical theater opera department, and Emerson's been a participant, and so he approached me
to be the
last
director.
Summer to say, when this gets to the stage, would you be interested in directing it? So because of our relationship and friendship, I said yes.
And Pioneer Park is where this will be performed. And what an appropriate venue for a talking about Fairbanks as a pioneer town and having it at Pioneer Park. I can't think of a better place.
Yes, it's nice that that's all ties in. It's a little tricky for the technical end of things.
Right, it wasn't built for an opera house.
Correct. Good. But it's the challenge, and that's what it's all about anyway. And there's wonderful local artists who are the set designer and the costume designer, and they all know the space. They're all Alaskan, so it was really, again, another collaborative effort, and it was really great to work with them all. So I'm having fun, despite the limitations on the stage.
I always tell people, there is not a bad seat in that house, though, at Pioneer Park Centennial Center. And so, you know, it's great to be able to do a performance there. And so you have a lot of set design and costumes. And, oh, how exciting.
Thank you. It is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And they're all set in the era of the Gold Rush.
Yes, we're right at the turn of the 19th to 20th century. So it's right on right around the time when the gold was first discovered in Nome, and before lots of people were heading towards that rush, there was an entrepreneur who persuaded people to come to Fairbanks instead, because there was also a discovery of gold very close to where Fairbanks is. So that's how the first big rush of people came here, instead of going to continue to go out to Nome. So it's exciting because it is. You see, the street names are named after people who, really started this town.
Right.
So it's very, very exciting, and I'm having a good time, and I got to do a lot of history reading about Fairbanks because I'm a little bit of a history nerd. So
this is perfect
that.
For you.
Yeah, perfect for me. So I truly enjoyed it. And then also Cassandra gave me the libretto, so that was an easy point of departure for me to get into all the names and the research and just join the train that was already going out of the station. So it's been a lot of fun.
Cassandra, we have already kind of mentioned the fact that this is a commissioned work, but we haven't mentioned the fact that it's part of the cultural offerings of the Arctic Winter Games. And tell me about the combination between those two things. Or we can turn it over to someone else if...
No, that's fine. When we were first looking at doing The Color of Gold, normally speaking, we do our shows early in the spring season, end of February or so. We do a main stage show in the summer, and then we do one in the fall. And for this particular one, since we were going to be having the Arctic Winter Games here in Fairbanks, there are a number of different cultural events going on at the same time. We talked to the Arctic Winter Games Committee and made a decision through the Opera Fairbanks Board that we would move this production specifically to bring another aspect to the Arctic Winter Games.
That is a really neat collaboration that you have too. I think that, you know, the Arctic Winter Games, they are really all inclusive, and this shows, you know, the work with Opera Fairbanks too. Should we head on into one of the selections from The Color of Gold? Is it time? Are our singers warmed up?
Cindy? Yes, they're ready.
Okay.
Our first selection is, the character's name is Elson Babcock. He is the industrialist in town. He owns half the town that's here, even if it's half of its tent and half of its building. And his goal is to truly just keep in charge and to be the one that really probably, with a little bit of sneaky tactics, tries to get the gold that may be discovered by a miner into his own hands. And the wonderful local singer Sylvain Demers is playing the role of Elson Babcock, and he will sing the first selection.
And Jamila is accompanying.
Oh, and Jamila.
On piano.
My goodness, I've forgotten our fabulous accompanist. She will also put her delicate fingers at the keyboard.
Of dreams they may say, but they all know what I say is the goal. What I say is the goal. The man with the gold lives his dreams today. They come on in as hell or thin like sin, their pouches full of dust and needing pay. I'll take their gold, lighten their load, and send them on their merry way. A pinch on the scale, a thumb on the scale, who's to know who can complain?
Bravo. Ah, that was great. Sylvain, this is not your first time with Opera Fairbanks, is it?
No, it's not, actually. It's the third time they kindly invite me to join in their productions. I first sang Dr. Stone for them in the Help the Globulinks, and then joined them for Verdi and the Bard last fall.
Great. Well, you play the entrepreneur, I hear.
Yes.
And so that was a very anthem-like song. There's a lot of hope in that.
I hope they all know what I stand for and they know who's running the show.
Oh, right.
That's my hope.
You own the town, as Cindy said, tents and all.
Yes. Everything that moves.
Everything that's kind of stationary, too, because the buildings and the tents are yours.
yeah, pretty much. But, you know, it's crazy. In the gold rush days, if somebody happened to find specks of gold under their tent, the whole thing would go upside down. And
right.
Gold, it's right here. They, you know, it wasn't all that permanent. A lot of these dwellings kind of got dealt over with card games and bets gone sour. But yeah, I'm there, and I need to make sure that people hear me loud and clear.
Well, I love opera because it you don't use any amplification usually, and it's so neat to see on stage where there's nothing in between you and the audience. There's some costumes and some set design, but you're on stage and there's really nothing. There's such a good connection there.
Yeah.
And projecting is one thing that you do so well, and you did it here at the station at KUAC so well, too. Thank you for coming in and bringing that selection. That was it sent chills.
My pleasure. I love to send chills.
Ah, yes. Cassandra, did you have certain people in mind when you were writing this opera? Because, you are a founder of Opera Fairbanks. So surely there were a few people maybe that you had in mind when you set out.
Well, there were two different aspects. There were a few characters from the Gold Rush days that kind of kept coming to the forefront, and none of our characters are exactly those people. When you listen to Elson Babcock and you see him on stage, he's kind of a little bit of an E.T. Barnett and Soapy Smith all rolled into one. We've got a miner who's loosely based on Felix Pedro. We have a Roxy LaRue character who's reminiscent of Klondike Kate. Uh-huh. When we started talking about doing The Color of Gold and who we wanted to sing certain roles, Emerson and I had some discussions. We had open auditions, and we were trying to cast as many Alaskans as we could. And I think we've succeeded pretty well.
Because you have a cast of all Alaskans or almost all Alaskans?
All Alaskans with one guest artist.
Aha, aha. And your guest artist is?
That would be Mr. Patrick Miller, who's portraying John Turner in the show.
Great. Well, Patrick, you want to sit down and chat just a bit since we mentioned your name?
Sure.
So where do you call home?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of us opera singers who live in New York City have trouble with that question.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Minnesota, and so I'm a little bit used to the cold up here.
Uh-huh.
But I've been living in New York City with my wife and daughter for 6 years.
Great. Wow. We got to go to the Metropolitan Opera a couple years ago, and what a great experience that was. Have you been performing at the Lincoln Center?
Well, most opera singers who live in New York City live there because that's where all the auditions are. I've performed several times at the Met, but most of my singing is outside of New York City. So all the opera companies come to New York City. That's sort of the home base for everybody. And they hear the singers, and they hire them, and then we all get on planes and fly to other places.
Well, welcome to Fairbanks. And it's great that you're part of the Color Gold cast. Did you have to hone your history of Fairbanks with this opera?
A little bit, yeah. I did some, that's actually, maybe I shouldn't admit it, but that's one of the wonderful things about YouTube. Whether you're an actor or a singer, if you hear about something, you want to hear about the history or story, you can pull up a documentary a lot of information just that way. Of course, with the internet in general, we can get a lot of information and history.
YouTube has made my job much easier, too.
Probably everybody's,
admit. Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's made people lose focus with the cat videos and whatever, but it also really does help us, like you say, do our job.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, like I said, welcome to Fairbanks, and we look forward to hearing your selection, too.
Thanks. Thank you.
And Cassandra, I want to talk to you just a little bit more before. I know you have to leave because you have a busy schedule, and because the performances are the premiere on Friday night, Saturday night, and then Sunday matinee. And over a little less than a decade ago, Opera Fairbanks was founded. Have you called Fairbanks home for a very long time?
Well, I moved to Fairbanks about 15 years ago. Okay. I married a local boy. His family's been here since before the big flood. And the house that we live in is actually the house that they all went to up on the hill when the flood happened.
Oh, in the late 60s, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So I originally grew up in Palmer and pretty much a lifelong Alaskan. We moved here when I was still an infant and met my husband when I was in grad school. And we decided to make Fairbanks our home. So I've been here about 15 years. One of the things that I missed when I came to town was more opera productions. The Summer Arts Festival does a wonderful job in the summer. FLOT has done some opera performances before. The university has done a variety of opera performances. But I really felt that the community could benefit from a professional opera company.
Right, dedicated to opera.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so I met with a few other like-minded people, and we officially incorporated in December of 2005 and started doing shows in the spring of 2007.
You are coming up on your 10-year anniversary with Opera Fairbanks.
It's coming up pretty fast.
Yeah. I bet you have some big dreams and plans for that.
Oh, there definitely are. Lots of things in the pipeline.
Yes. Well, this is a big deal for Fairbanks to have an opera written here. I understand that it might not be the first opera written in Fairbanks, but it's the first one that's commissioned, right? Or is that...
I'm not sure if that's my understanding, but I don't know that for certain.
Right.
But to my knowledge, this is the first opera written by Fairbanks residents about Fairbanks or inspired by Fairbanks. And when we were writing the libretto and the music, it was purposely kept just a little bit vague to where this could have been Central City in a different time. It could have been Sacramento and their gold rush. And so it opens up the experience to not just the people in Fairbanks or Alaska and opera companies, but it sends it all around the country as well.
That's why Fairbanks isn't in the title.
That's correct.
You know, it's The Color of Gold. It's about the gold rush. And the gold rush happened here in Alaska. It happened in the Yukon. It happened, like you said, down in California.
California, Colorado,
yes.
Different places all across the country.
And so are you thinking that this possibly could go on tour?
Don't know. We'll have to see how it's received by the audience. I will say as a librettist, it's been really a treat for me to work with Emerson and Cindy and to see how my ideas on paper and the script that I have running in my head changes when you get different artistic viewpoints, when you get a composer that has a different and wonderful but different idea, and the stage director as well. And you go to rehearsals and you think, well, you know, that's not what I saw, but it's still a fabulous picture.
Is this the first opera you've ever written?
That's correct.
Okay, so it was a new experience for you.
It was. It was a new and fascinating and really, really enjoyable experience. I have had so much fun doing this. I can't even express to you.
And it's The Color of Gold, and it premieres, the world premiere is on Friday night at Pioneer Park at 7:30, and second and third performances are Saturday night at 7:30 at Pioneer Park, and then final matinee on Sunday. So this weekend is the weekend to experience The Color of Gold.
That's correct. There are only three performances.
That's right. And you have singers from not just Fairbanks, but like you said, you brought an out-of-state person in and from all over Alaska. So
that's correct.
You've probably been practicing a lot here.
Well, I'll let Cindy and Emerson talk about
yes.
the amount of practice. But
I bet.
Yeah, every time I go down to the theater, there's somebody there rehearsing.
Is it fun to see that all come alive in the whole staging of it and to hear the words you put on paper to music?
Absolutely.
Oh.
And, you know, you have kind of the little subtext running in your mind, and it's really a treat to see the different artists and their interpretations as well with the music that they've been given and the stage direction, and then each one of them has made the character their own.
That's amazing. Well, we should hear some more of the music now that we've talked a little bit about that. Cindy.
Yes, our next selection is a duet between Elson Babcock, who you just heard, and now John Turner, sung by Patrick Miller. He's a newcomer. He's just come off the steamer, and he's anxious to get started. He's part of this whole fever of wanting to discover gold.
He's one of the miners?
He's one of the miners.
Uh-huh.
He has brought his young family. He has a wife, Abigail, and a daughter named Hope. And they have arrived, and he has gone to the land office and has filed a claim on Prospect 99, and that happened to be a claim that Elson Babcock let just run out. So the two men are meeting for the first time, and Babcock is the one who instigates the conversation. So again, we have Sylvain Demers singing the role of Elson Babcock and Patrick Miller singing the role of John Turner.
Great.
You there, mean sir, yes you. You are the three. You filed a claim on Prospect 99. That claim is mine, and you'll find I don't take to sharing.
I filed the claim fair and square. The land office says it's all. Your claim ran out. The land is free.
Back off that claim. Sign to my name. I'll let you work it. I'll let you work it for a portion. A portion of the gold. Don't cross me now. Don't cross me.
Thank you for your offer, but I must respectfully decline.
Respectfully.
We came not to be free, not to be told how to live our lives on someone else.
Once your luck starts running your way, take my offer before it's too late. Hard to feed those gals without any pay.
We came not to be told.
It's hard to get that gold.
Not to be told.
Harder to keep it once your luck starts running.
Duet from two very powerful singers. Patrick, again, welcome to Fairbanks and the Opera Fairbanks production. And so now sitting in front of me is stage director Cindy Oxford. Yes, Cindy Oxford. I need to write that down. And Patrick Miller and Sylvain, I didn't quite catch your last name either.
Demers. Or Demers.
That was a powerful duet that the two of you did there. And you can see the tension between, you know, who thinks he has rights to it and the other guy who thinks he has rights to that claim also. And so much of that went on in the actual gold rush and, well, probably still does to this day. Are you all dressed up, too, for the gold rush times?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be having not only sounding the part good, but looking the part good. That's especially true of Babcock because he needs to advertise. It's not just his words.
He's a big man in town.
His whole demeanor. Oh, yeah, of course. And it's like, if you've got it, flaunt it. I think that's a line from the producers. But he's a snappy dresser. And,
are you actually
he
wearing
can afford
some gold?
Whereas some of the other miners will kind of look a little scruffy. He's better groomed, and he can afford nothing but the best. I mean, if you read anything about the gold rush, it's actually some of the crazy stuff.
Actually have a gold watch for the production?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Nothing but. I was never much into silver. But I mean, you read stories. I read more extensively, I guess, about the gold rush in the Yukon. And just to think that to this day you go to Dawson, it's like Madame Tremblay's dresses and hats from France. And at the turn of the century in Dawson, a dozen eggs went for $120. They carried, these poor souls who had nothing, carried pianos in pieces over the Chilkoot. So
yeah,
if you did strike it rich, then nothing was too good.
We almost had to carry this piano down in pieces because the elevator is out right now on the music wing. So luckily, yes, Jamila, luckily we had one on this floor and it was tuned up. And thank you to the UAF Music Department for making that all possible. We have a piano for today's Alaska Live at KUAC. Cindy, can you talk a little bit about the costuming? Because it sounds just amazing with, you know, Babcock's got the gold watch and we've
Indeed.
Got the miners. And
as you can imagine, fur was a big uh-huh. element up here. So if the more you wore it, the more you probably had money. So many of the townswomen who were here and were their husbands were industrial people who had businesses. They probably had a lot of fur. And in fact, I found a picture in the archives of this woman with white fox wrapped around her. She had a white fox muff. She had a little white fox hat, and she's standing in the snow.
Oh.
So all I saw was the outline of her beautiful black velvet dress because everything else just blended in with the snow. And I stared at it for the longest time until I realized, oh, my gosh, those are all foxes wrapped around her. And so Babcock will actually have some fur on his coat collar.
Oh, those lucky performers stand under those performance lights in furs.
Absolutely.
And lots of wool.
Right, and lots of wool. So actually John Turner is a miner. So though he has arrived in probably his best suit, he does live most of the opera in his miner's look, which were, you know, rugged wool pants, leather belts, boots.
Canvas type stuff.
Right. They had their packs. They carried everything on their back. And if they went into the mountains, they were carrying it on their back. So it's really the adventurous spirit is so strong. And that's what I kept trying to convey to everyone, that that's so important, that you really have spirit in your characters. Because, gosh, those people sure did.
The determination had to have been very strong to, first of all, make it up here to interior Alaska, and then second of all, to go out, and it is not easy. The miner's job is not an easy one.
Not an easy one, and the other thing I did read a lot about is that people didn't really believe it was that cold. They had heard it was cold, but so people were actually dying of the cold, you know, freezing to death was sort of a norm. A lot of miners were found. I found a picture with these miners had found this frozen miner, and so they put it in front of them, and then they all stood behind it like, look what we found. And there was this picture of a dead miner, and I was sort of struck by that as well, about the harsh cruelty of one day you're fine and the next day you're frozen to death. And
well,
that took me a little bit by surprise.
Oh, the temperatures can be so extreme, too. You know, one day, like you said, you're fine because it's 0 degrees. The next day you go out and it's 30, 40, 50 below.
Right.
And those are some dangerous temperatures, which nobody can describe to you.
No.
You just, you know, they might have heard stories, but there's just no preparing or no believing that until you experience
it. I am a native New Yorker, so I'm from there. So when I first came in the summer, I was always struck by, gosh, you know, no one ever goes to sleep. It's always light out.
Time, yeah.
And we would be talking, and I'd look down at my watch, and I would be, oh, my gosh, it's 2 a.m. I have to go to bed. So the reverse now happened for me. It was, we have wet cold back home, the snow, and it's a lot of moisture in the air. And that's truly the most telling thing to me. The cold doesn't hit you quite as cold as you think it's going to be. And so you feel a little brave and you leave the rehearsal room with just your hat on, your gloves. And I was walking across the street from the church where we're rehearsing to Gulliver's Books. And I was like, what was I thinking? I had to run back and get my coat because it was really cold. And I was just thinking I could make it.
Then there's the peer pressure of when I got here and I had, you know, I brought long underwear. Mm-hmm. I'm from Minnesota, so I know what cold it is. Mm-hmm. What cold is, but you know, this is really cold.
Yeah, it is.
And you get here and you've got your hat and you've got your scarf and you got all these coats and boots. Then I look around at the locals and they're all, you know, wearing like shorts and flip flops. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't look like I'm from here.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Absolutely.
And then on stage, you're wearing the wool stuff and you're
all. No flip flops.
Oh, I see that we have brought Jamie in, and so let's talk about some of the women of the cast. We haven't heard from any of the ladies yet, so it's nice to see you here.
Yeah, this is Jamie Rose, who is a local, and she plays the role of Abigail Turner, and I'll let her speak to that.
And who is Abigail Turner in The Color of Gold?
Abigail Turner is John Turner's wife.
Uh-huh. Oh, she's so brave to come up with him.
Super brave. She is following her husband and loves him, and they've brought their little daughter, Hope Turner, along with them on the steamer all the way from Chicago. That's our little storyline here.
And so is there someone who plays Hope Turner on stage?
There is a young girl. Her name is Sydney. Mm-hmm. And she does lovely, Sydney Edwards. And
Cindy
she
Edwards.
Just does a lovely job. She has some little solos on her own. And we sing as a family unit. And we came up together and we've come to make a new life for ourselves in Alaska.
And boy, what an amazing woman Abigail must be to, you know, agree to bring the daughter, you know, all the way from down in the lower 48 up to Alaska and brave the new frontier.
Yes, and she sort of is a very, I think the best way to describe her is a true God-fearing woman. She's trying to maintain, in sort of a rough and tumble town, her own morality. And they all befriend, the Turners befriend the minister right away. And they are determined to sort of keep that high road through their storyline of the show.
And he's also a character in The Color Gold.
Right.
The minister.
Phineas.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Played by David Miller.
Oh, yeah, who is also here with us today for Alaska Live. So we'll get to one of his songs, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything to add, John Turner?
No, not really. I think you've put it pretty well. They're looking for a new life and they come to Alaska. And when John Turner meets Babcock, I think that's sort of the first taste of, okay, this is. You're not in Kansas anymore. This is, this feels pretty lawless to him. And I think he wants to stand his ground. He wants to be respectful. But he hasn't quite realized, that's how the exchanges are here, that who's got the power, who's got the money has the power. And Babcock is not dressed in dirty work clothes because he was one of those people who came to the town and said, you know, rather than me trying to go and fight people for the gold, I'll sell people all the tools to get the gold. And, you know, a lot of those, whether it's San Francisco or Dawson or any place like that, those are the people that really made out like bandits.
Wow. And some smart entrepreneurs.
Yeah, in whatever it was.
The middleman.
1847, when one man in San Francisco realized, hey, I'm going to set up a store. And he started sending out leaflets by mule to the rest of the country saying there's gold here. And so he's the one who brought everybody. And in the meantime, he bought up every shovel and pick he could.
Amazing.
And he prepared himself and he became a very, very wealthy man. Whereas, you know, most of the people, after a lot of the easy gold was mined, that's when everybody came. And that's when it was much harder to get and much harder to keep. And so people like Babcock were and on the ground floor, and he was smart to do what he did, but obviously his greed, removed some of his humanity, I think.
And that's part of the plot line.
Exactly.
In The Color Gold.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you ready to sing your duet?
So this duet takes place in Act Two, and as we were working together when we first got together in the staging rehearsal, we were thinking of locations and where does this duet take place. So we sort of collaboratively arrived that they are going on a picnic and they're starting to go up into the hill. They have their daughter and they're actually looking for the right place. So they happen to stop for a moment and rest just to get their bearings, and then they're going to just keep going to look for that spot. So it's here at the rest spot that they have this exchange between the two of them.
That just displays such emotion, too, of this couple in a new place and, you know, the wife's devotion and the husband's devotion also. It's really gorgeous. Jamie, welcome back to Fairbanks and Opera Fairbanks.
Hi, it's good to be singing at home. It's really great.
You've been on tour, I take from that statement.
Well, wherever the work is, you know, a lot of times, just like Patrick was saying, as an opera singer, you spend a lot of time on the road wherever the gig is, wherever that music is calling you to sing. So,
and last time we saw you here with Opera Fairbanks was the Elixir of Love, right?
I think La Boheme was actually
La Boheme.
But yes,
okay,
Elixir
yes.
La Boheme. So this is my third time singing at home. Yeah.
Oh, well, welcome back. It's
thank you.
Wonderful to hear your beautiful voice again.
Thank you.
And Emerson, I know that you are here studying your music. And is this the first time you've had to conduct from sitting on the floor with your music on a chair? And probably not.
Probably not.
No.
I'm sure it's happened before.
Emerson agreed to do some conducting because that's what you do from the orchestra pit during the show. And so the singer said, yeah, that'd be great if you conducted again here at Alaska Live to keep them all on the same page.
Well, I'm very fortunate to have Jamila playing the piano back here. She's been stalwart, as usual, with every Opera Fairbanks production. Anyone that knows the town knows that. So.
Yes. Yes, and so when you first introduced what the music was like, I was like, oh, you said it was, you know, complicated and tricky. But so many of these pieces have been also very anthem-like and lyrical and just taking you in. And so it was an interesting introduction to that. But then I thought, oh, is it going to be really modern? It can't be, because it's set, you know, in the gold rush. Mm-hmm. And so, boy, these pieces are, the music is really gorgeous.
Thank you. I think I may have been confusing when I said that it was difficult, or there are some difficult parts.
Jamila's
over there laughing.
Like, yeah, there are.
But the singers really make it sound rather effortless, which is
indeed.
The caliber of singers that we have in this production is, well, I'm very fortunate. I think there's a quotation by I was telling Jamie Rose this the other night when I first heard her singing my music. This is the first production of my music, of people singing my music, which is, that's a great opportunity for me, and I'm very fortunate.
And congratulations.
But I was telling Jamie Rose that the script writer for or David Mamet is his name, yeah. And he said something like that he loved writing for people like Robert De Niro and you know, because he writes things, and then they, when they say the line, they bring something he never even imagined possible.
As a new life.
Because that's, yeah, they're that good. And I feel like that's what happened when I first heard these artists singing my work. They bring, you know, their story. They bring their it's really humbling, actually, to hear people investing that much into your music. And
when you're composing, there's only so much you can imagine in your head. You know, you can't quite imagine what it will be like in real life when they're on stage.
Yeah, there's been a few edits here and there, I won't lie.
Of course. It's all part of the process.
But, you know, honestly, when singers devote their time to singing your music, they often have some really good ideas of how to make it better. And when in orchestra rehearsals, you know, you're dealing with people that know their instruments and they have ideas. And so it becomes quite collaborative. And but anyway.
You mentioned the orchestra. Here at KUAC's Alaska Live, we don't have room for the orchestra, but we have room for the piano. So it's orchestrated too.
Yeah. So Jamila's okay. Playing an orchestral reduction, and she's just
amazing
trying to do everything. But yeah, it is fully orchestrated. In fact, when I was first commissioned, they basically gave me free rein to use a full romantic orchestra, and then we discovered that Pioneer Park was going to be the venue, and so we had to, you know, do some
tear
shuffling. Yeah,
bit.
And yeah. And it's going to be fabulous, but there's always minor little edits that have to be made in order to make
creative
art.
Chair
art
setup.
Isn't easy, right?
Creative chair setup.
Is
there? For the orchestra.
Yes. Nobody gets an eye poked out so far, though, with a violin or viola bow.
No, it's.
Is there a piano on stage for, like, those bar scenes?
You know, initially that was an idea.
Okay.
There's a little segment in here where there's a bar scene. And initially we wanted kind of an out-of-tune piano. But, you know, I mean, we're dealing with a stage that is very small. And so ended up just being a fiddle tune in the orchestra that plays Camp Town Races. And when I said some of the rhythms are complex, I mean that like Camp Town Races is thrown into five rather than two. And
you're going to throw those old-time folks off.
Yeah. And it's just kind of funny. And then, like, they're – of course, you don't hear the minors chorus that opens the whole thing, which is all in five, and it's kind of the stumbling. And I didn't mean it was complex in the sense that it's very singable and very tuneful, but it has this sort of staggering offbeat feel. And
which they must have felt when they were coming to a new place.
Yeah, I couldn't see minors not being a little clumsy, I guess. I guess for lack of a better word in that time period. You know, I mean, you don't go to a minor for for choreography. I mean,
they're not ballet
dancers. So to me, when I'm writing, I thought, how can I make this sound, masculine and earthy?
Yeah.
And
Patrick, who plays John Turner the Minor, has sat down and...
I was just going to say that one of the things about the Minors is they were clumsy at the time because most of the people who are coming up there were dropping everything. I mean, there were stories of people who were blacksmiths or people who were, you know, not even had less sort of manual labor experience coming up and doing this. And, you know, none of these guys really had any experience being miners. And so it was all, I'm sure it was pretty clumsy.
Let's see how coordinated you are if you lose a toe too, huh? You know?
While Patrick is here, I want to say that it's been a dream working with him too. He, after one of the rehearsals, we were joking around and I was telling him about how nice it is to have, it was a role that I was doing another role I was doing previously where I didn't have an aria and I was like, and he's like, well, why didn't you write me one? And so I was like,
Jokingly.
So you cranked one out?
And so, yes. So
so the next day he sends me a draft of an aria.
And he's willing to sing this with a week's notice. So, we're very fortunate. So
I said it jokingly because, you know, a composer doesn't just go home and write an aria. I mean, you have to coordinate it. You have to have the libretto. You have to have words for this aria. And then putting something together that's, you know, worth listening to.
Apparently, and if you're Emerson Eads and Cassandra Tilly, you do.
It was amazing. I mean, he showed me this first draft and it was fantastic. I mean, he writes that. That's the wonderful thing about this piece and working with Emerson is the music is so easy to listen to. I mean, I've done a lot of new music and sometimes it's not easy to listen to and it's certainly not easy to learn. But I think, you know, sometimes, and I love all kinds of new music, but I think that audiences will really respond to this music because it's very accessible. It's not written to push people away. It's written to bring people in. And I think the tunes are really they feel familiar once you hear them. And
that's what I've noticed.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like you've heard them before, and I think that's one mark of. Of a good composer.
Yes, it is. And
one of your locals. Thank
you. And audiences, keep that in mind that it's really accessible music and you can experience that at Pioneer Park this weekend. Friday is your opener at 7:30 and then Saturday night's your second performance and then your final performance is on Sunday afternoon at 2.
Correct.
Cindy, yeah. Should we move on to the next piece? We have some more singers in here, and we have more singers on deck. So, what's next?
I just wanted to say another thing
about
Emerson. It's the Emerson fan club today. that he, being a singer, and you know, did one of his many degrees in singing. I think that also comes to his writing and composer. Because I echo what Patrick said, the tunes are incredibly beautiful and accessible. Singers want to sing them. People want to hear them. So I know that that's very true, and I think that's a big credit to him. So, okay.
Exciting.
Yes.
So you're introducing the next piece, Cindy?
Yes, we're returning to the evil Elson Babcock. He has now... heard a miner came running back into town saying that John Turner has struck gold.
Ooh.
So he hears this because he steps out of his bank, and here is his response to that information.
And
gold, but a need in my soul, need and greed to drive me ever onward, onward, ever onward. I've got the gold, I own men's souls, men's souls. This man with the gold.
That was a chilling piece. Sounds like things aren't going as well as they were at the beginning for you in that one.
Well, you know, in playing the villain, there's a lot of material to playing the villain. But I, as an actor, and Cindy's been absolutely wonderful to work with, that way of finding other dimensions to a character like that. I, for one, as a human being, don't believe that anybody is born evil.
Right.
So you kind of have to go back and think, what made him that way? What, how has he traveled that way? So this song, and in speaking with Emerson early on in the process as well, there's a chance to show Babcock's vulnerability a little bit. He's struggling. This is a drug to him. He's an addict, and the greed is what owns him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't need the money anymore. It's the power, and he realizes that time. It's, you know, he's a lonely man. He's in darkness, and there's a bit of a chance for that in there. It's not all anthem-like.
Yes.
But, you know, stay tuned, because he doesn't dwell on that too long.
Right. We move on.
Yeah.
Let me remind you, you're listening to Alaska Live on KUAC 89.9 FM and KUAC HD Fairbanks. The Color of Gold, the Opera Fairbanks production, is here with me before their weekend performances Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Pioneer Park. And we've brought more singers in. It's so exciting. Cindy, should we talk about the next piece?
Yes. Who's walked into the studio is Dr. David Miller, who's playing the role of the preacher, Phineas Lynch. And he has blessed Sylvain, because it's truly been a joy working with everyone. I'm a very collaborative style director. I want to know what you're thinking about. I just don't want to tell you what to do. I want to hear what you've been thinking about. And David has been a real thoughtful man about the character of the preacher. So we've enjoyed finding out together just what the preacher's about. So actually, David is quite able to talk about the preacher himself. So why don't you, David?
Welcome, David.
Thank you. It's been a real joy working here in Fairbanks once again, especially the privilege of debuting this magnificent work by Emerson Eads. As I mentioned to him this morning, great works kind of grow on you. And I think as a surgeon in private practice, I have developed a few skills to maintain my objectivity. Even though I'm intimately involved with this production, I am overwhelmed with the orchestrations and the collaboration that we're seeing here in Fairbanks, and really excited about our opening this weekend. My character, Phineas Lynch.
You are the preacher.
Obviously, you know, gold towns draw all kinds, and I think they're fertile fields for those who want to bring more people into their flock, and that is Phineas Lynch. Unfortunately, however, they are very dangerous places, and they are filled with dangerous people, and sometimes even those with the best intentions and those who live according to the path of righteousness fall prey to natural activities and disasters and the mischief of men. And so Phineas Lynch has to deal with that in his character. He has to come up with hellfire and this is the way to go, and then realize over time that perhaps there is a broader way to view the community. And I think that's what Fairbanks has become, is a broader community full of different attitudes and personalities. And that's the journey that I take through this piece.
Because people are seeking gold, but people are also seeking, you know, redemption. And so your character is there to help them out.
Yeah, I think the town has that sense of wildness every day. What's going to happen? And probably a whole bunch of people also want to have a sense that there's some sort of order in their life. And I think that religion, organized religion, can bring that order to the town, and so he walks a fine line of recognizing the rough and tumble, but still trying to keep many of the town people, you know, in a sense of order, that they have purpose for life and sense of community. And again, David does capture that when he's working on stage, that he really has a sense of bringing the community together, which if you come to see the opera, you will get to see David do that very well. So.
Yes. We were just in Madagascar on my honeymoon, and we went to a new gem town, and our guide described it as the Wild Wild West. And he said, you know, all these miners are there hitting the sapphires and the gems. And this town had sprung up from, you know, a town of a few hundred to more than a few thousand, you know, like 10,000 people. And that was the one time when he said, please roll up your windows. Because he said, it really is the Wild, Wild West here. And we'll stop at a gem shop, but I'd like it if you'd roll up your windows until we get there. And it had that feel of, you know, people were there to gain.
To gain.
Yes.
Yes. So if you're working hard all day, you sort of want to play wild and crazy at night. And so Phineas meets all these people every day who are, you know, in the town, that tries to come into town and buy their goods and maybe think about setting up a school. There seems to be young children, and we don't seem to have any structure for them. So half the town's thinking ahead, and the other half is just let's party and dig for gold the next day. So Phineas is right there in between the two groups of people, and it's a delicate place to be.
Well, are we ready to hear the selection that Phineas sings? Yes, Emerson.
I just wanted to say something about the preacher's music. I wrote this role for Dr. Miller,
nice.
Crossing my fingers and hoping that he was going to be able to make it, because he's a surgeon, so he can't just up and leave.
He has some scheduling to do.
Yeah. So, but what's unique about his role is that almost everything he sings is in 5 or 10, the meter, 5, 4, 10.
Which is odd.
And it's, yeah, and it's tough. And it's, I mean, it doesn't sound tough. He makes it sound easy. But it started off, his role began as a kind of a one-dimensional preacher, in terms of he's this blustery, you know, fire and brimstone guy. But then this little couplet at the end of the first aria that he sings, he kind of goes introspective and he says, I must find a way to save these souls today. And as I was writing it, I was like gleefully writing him this sort of blustery message, because we all have probably pastors and stuff in our lives that we've can draw inspiration from, for blustery fire and brimstone kind of guy. But then when I saw that little couplet, I was just like, oh, this guy is deeper. He's going to go through some sort of transformation where, you know, he sees the complexity of life and isn't so myopic about, the Bible being the way. So anyway,
all right,
step out of the way.
So this aria takes place actually right after the aria of Babcock that we heard. They sort of cross paths, and here's his comment on what seems to be happening here in the city of Fairbanks.
One last thing. This is right after an explosion in the mine. Ooh. And there's a death.
Okay.
And this is what he comes up from the mine singing.
The will of God. the frailty of man. Joy at the soul in heaven, despair here, despair here, despair here at hand. A loving soul brought for the promise of the gold. Our Lord has a plan for every single man. The love of our Father works in mysterious ways I can't understand. This man of God, where to turn? Where to turn to ease the ache upon his soul? The ache upon his soul. Master, earthly Father, Master, earthly Father, no longer here to ease her tears. It's a hard thing, it's a hard thing. Yes, it's the hardest thing to trust in God this way. I can't understand trust in God this way. Heavenly Father, Heavenly Father, watch for his daughter. Bring us joy once his sorrow fades. Yes, bring her joy once her sorrow fades.
Ends in comfort. Oh, that's just a really beautiful piece too. Well, thank you, Dr. Miller. Do some of your patients know what you do in your free time?
Yeah, it's surprising you should ask that. I sing a lot in Juneau where I practice. Uh-huh. And in addition to some of these more serious roles, I've recently come out of a large can of hairspray dressed as Edna.
No way.
So they get to see the full spectrum.
And Juneau, I mean, it's a pretty small town. So, you know, people know you.
They do.
You're like, I had surgery last year and he was my surgeon. I'm sure of it.
I was told a story by one of my patients. They were watching me dance during a production of Carmen. And she leaned over to him and said, "That man took out my gallbladder." Well, he leaned back to her and said, "That man took out my colon." So that's the beauty about living in Alaska. You just never know who you're going to run into on the street.
Really bonding on a lot of levels there. Yeah. Oh, that's great. We have another singer here in the room, and we should
we're going to
feature her too.
Tie this all together. What the reference to "Please take care of the daughter," is that John Turner has died in that explosion.
And wondered so, if it was that. Yep. Oh, poor Abigail, the widow.
Yes, now the widow and their young child, Hope. Mm-hmm. So we're about to come to the funeral, and the minister has probably gotten several of his members of his congregation and some people who are, you know, of faith to come and be a part of a choir that sings the Our Father that Emerson has so unbelievably set to this incredibly powerful prayer with both the minister and the choir, and all of the wonderful people in the chorus who are all members of the Fairbanks community are just terrific. And it's, they finished and now they've all gone back into town, and the minister is just sort of waiting for Abigail to perhaps say some final words at the gravesite. And in comes Belinda. And Belinda is actually sort of the right hand of Babcock.
Oh.
She runs the saloon. She's the proprietress. She's in charge. She's entrepreneurial. She probably has a few secrets on him, so they know how to abide with each other and just understand that they get along in the business world. They have things to do to take care of the businesses, and the day ends and all is smooth. But it's here that she has wandered up to the funeral and graveyard area. And we're about to discover this side of her that we didn't really know about until now. And it's that she probably was very similar to Abigail in that she had a love and perhaps was married. And so she too has lost someone. And so she comes because she's drawn to this couple that seems to represent what her life was many, many years ago. And she wanders into the tail end of the funeral service. And what unfolds is this beautiful prayer that they exchange as an unbelievably beautiful duet. And it's Mary Catherine Maroney who is playing the role of Belinda.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And wow, well, it's good to know that there are women entrepreneurs in The Color of Gold also, as there were in the Gold Rush, definitely. And
very
Belinda
much so.
Plays that.
I feel that Cassie and Emerson definitely wrote a very strong female cast, which you don't see a whole lot. And it's kind of exciting to know, you know, that the history of this, women, even now in Fairbanks, have to be tough to survive, you know, and it's, there's very much a partnership, whether the woman is single or in a marriage. I see that in Fairbanks daily. You know, I'm not from here, and that's one of the big things I noticed, is that everyone comes together and works very hard together.
It's part of that process. If somebody's going to take a job up here from the lower 48, that have you introduced your family to the place yet? Mm-hmm. Have they gotten to experience it yet? Because you know, you can fall in love with it, or you can be very resentful, or, you know, and
definitely.
So everybody kind of has seen that unfold. And so, and it's good to know it's always kind of been like that.
For sure.
Yeah. So your piece is from when you, Abigail, lose your husband, the miner,
yes.
in a mining accident. Okay. Are we ready to hear that?
Sure.
Okay. We have The Color of Gold production. Two of the singers here, and Jamila is on piano accompanying, and it's so good to have them here at Alaska Live.
It's
That's such a moving hymn. And then to hear a familiar tune put into your beautiful voices, and it's changed for the opera, and it's just it's just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Ah, really gorgeous. And you can tell the draw between you. I mean, I haven't even seen the opera yet, and I already experienced part of it.
No, there definitely is a push and pull between the two women, representing very different female experiences in town.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of something that we play, a dynamic that's played really beautifully through the whole piece.
And we've definitely had a lot of discussion as well, because I know character-wise, I very much see the Abigail as, like Cindy was saying, who I used to be. And there's this tearing because I feel that I've faced the same decisions that she is going through, you know, but I made different choices. And so there's a lot of soul searching, you know. She's struggling very hard because she wants to reach out, and she knows that it will not be received.
Right, because Belinda, you're the saloon owner. You run the things there, the hub of the Gold Rush town.
Right.
And Abigail, you're now the widow of the miner. And the reason why you've come to this last frontier is because of the gold.
Because my husband is gone. So it's a very vulnerable place.
Well, we have a really beautiful duet, kind of a semi-duet recit later on, where we both acknowledge this. You know, she sings there are worse things than dying, and I counter with there are worse things than surviving.
Mm,
you know, and it's, I don't know, that part always gives me the chills.
Wow, Cassandra, she wrote some really emotional pieces into this
opera.
It does,
and it's caused us to really dig deeply. I say bring your tissues, because I know that Emerson and I have not made it through without crying yet. So
I just had to think about other things during that last piece, because I can't be the... Yeah. Yes, indeed. There are some happy-go-lucky moments, I'm sure, when gold is found, and then there are some pieces where there's losses and just some achingly gorgeous works, too.
Well, and I was going to say, I was thinking about this while I was sitting over there. Part of what I love with what Cindy and Alex have done with the scenery is that I came up to Fairbanks a couple years ago, and I live with my best friend's family, and they have been here. They're Fairbanks natives. And so it's neat to hear they talk about that there used to be a boardwalk downtown.
Right.
You know, and I love that in our staging, we have a boardwalk downtown.
Oh, neat.
You know, it's neat to just walk around Fairbanks and really feel that it's both on stage and still in the town, that there's still that old feel, you know, when you're downtown and you can see where the flood happened, you know, where boats ran into buildings and, you know, different buildings. I've just been here forever, and they're landmarks. You know, people say, oh, just turn at that store. And it's neat that there's some kind of magic about Fairbanks that I feel is carried into this piece, that people who are from here will recognize their home, and people who aren't will recognize something that they've read or that they've seen in a movie, or just some kind of nostalgia, because no matter where we're from, there is a beauty of what came before that has made us who we are.
It makes me want to go walk around Pioneer Park right now. You know? I mean, because there's the boardwalk there, and there's pieces of history.
Those buildings are original. Like, I am so excited that it is at Pioneer Park. Yeah. It's one of my favorite places to go because it's still alive. You know, history is alive.
It's going to be a wonderful setting there, definitely. Have we done all the selections that we planned on? We have two more. Let's do those. Yes.
I know. I say I work with some great ladies in the show, so and they just do their thing. At the end of the duet, Abigail doesn't see Belinda. She tries to hide so that she's not seen at the gravesite, and she leaves with her daughter. So this is just simply now Belinda's opportunity to reflect about what she's just witnessed, and she certainly sang. So here is Mary Catherine singing the aria by Belinda.
Thank you.
Oh, a song of sorrow and hope there from The Color of Gold and Belinda, played by Mary Catherine Maroney. God. Well, that was just gorgeous. Thank you so much. Do we have, we're talking about the final piece from the piece.
Correct.
And Cindy, I wanted to mention that this work is commissioned by gold miners.
Oh,
is
yes.
that true?
It was underwritten by Kinross Fort Knox.
Yeah. How appropriate.
Yeah, of course. In fact, I think some of their...
Actually, we have someone who's going to be a super, and a supernumerary is someone who doesn't have to sing or speak, but just simply is on the stage representing a character. And so we do have a guest from the mine who's going to be in the last act.
Oh, how fun for
as
them.
As a townswoman.
Oh, how
there's a
fun
guy
for
there's
them.
A there's a guy singing in the chorus who his name is Mac McDerris, and he's an employee at Fort Knox. So actually, now that we're talking about the choir really quickly, I just want to say how magnificent they are. They're not doing it for pay, that's for sure. They are in it because they love music.
Yeah.
And some of their kids are in it.
Cool.
So but yeah, I want to say again, the chorus is just, I mean, a lot of them are in, you know, they come in after working a full day doing whatever, like Mac, you know, from the gold mine, and he comes and sings in this opera. And if you listen to them, you know, last night during the Zitz probe, they were just phenomenal. I mean, really phenomenal. So I think Fairbanks will be really proud to watch the chorus.
Indeed.
I'm continually amazed by the level of singers and performers and what people bring to the stage here in Fairbanks. I'm continually amazed. And again, I think that's going to happen with The Color Gold. You've brought in singers from all over Alaska, but these are the orchestra and the choir are Fairbanksans.
Yeah, I just want to give the opportunity for Jamila to talk because she's
been facing the other direction.
She's been doing nothing but playing.
Yes.
So.
Well, I just want to say that I'm really happy to be part of this because it's pretty amazing. And when Emerson first wrote this opera, he gave me the music and I started practicing it. And he kept asking me, "What do you think about the music? Tell me what you think. You know, tell me honestly what you think." And
he needs some feedback.
I was like, I don't really know yet, because it takes everybody to put it together to really see what it is like. So, you know, I learned the notes and I didn't know what it's going to be like until I heard the singers fit it, and then until he became conducting and it all kind of fell apart again. Put it back together because it's very difficult.
I'm sure.
So we, you know, for all of us, it's so new, like totally new, right? So it's just kind of a miracle to bring something like this.
It's not like
stage.
You could prepare because you've heard it on the Met stage,
no,
or
you've
heard recordings of this. This is all brand new.
It's all just coming to life right now.
Total process. Yeah. Neat.
It's been wonderful.
Thanks, Jamila. And thanks for coming in and accompanying these wonderful singers, too. It's amazing. Okay, we've got a bunch of them in here for the finale.
Actually, it's just one, but everyone's come in to be listening inside. The final selection we're doing today is Abigail's aria, her final aria. She's now refused the help of Belinda to perhaps come into the saloon. She's run out of money. All of her credit that her and her husband may have had in the town has run dry. She's really at her wit's end, and she's quite distraught and worried about what's going to become of her and her daughter. And I'm not giving away the ending, which makes everyone have to come and see the opera. So it's Jamie Rose is singing Abigail's final aria from Act Two of The Color of Gold.
Great. And this particular poem was written by E.E. Cummings. It's I Carry Your Heart With Me. And I just want to say one thing, too, about the staging of this, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
When Cindy first staged this section, I was a mess, like, trying to conduct this. Like, I couldn't. It was so moving. And that's one of the things that Cindy is bringing to this. I mean, she brings obviously a lot of experience to the table, but she works with these people in Fairbanks. She's used to working with people that are in D.C. and New York, right, that are being paid substantial amounts of money to do what they do, and she's working with people that are volunteering essentially their time. And it's beautiful
but
to watch.
I love them just as much.
Yes. It's beautiful to watch. Anyway.
Great. My heart went out to you there, Abigail. Oh, goodness.
Pretty intense there for a minute.
Pretty intense, yes. This has been such a treat having you all here. Cassandra Tilley, the librettist, had to leave early, but we thank her for coming in and writing such a wonderful opera. And Emerson Eads, thank you for being here, composing such beautiful music, and conducting from the floor and using a chair as your stand. You know we have real music stands.
You can do it anywhere.
Lori, thank you so much for having us on today. Yeah. It's really wonderful to have the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Cindy Oxford, the director, this is going to be absolutely a treat on stage.
I hope so. I know it will be, so not worried. Thank you.
And The Color of Gold is premiering on Friday night, March 14th at Pioneer Park at 7:30 and continues on in its production on the 15th on Saturday night at 7:30. And then the Sunday matinee is at 2 o'clock, one weekend only for The Color of Gold. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
KUAC's Alaska Live series of live music and conversation with local and visiting artists is provided by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier.